Systems seem threatened by seeking. All this stuff about how scary genuinely open discussion, thinking things out fully, and seeking better answers can be, came to mind when I was watching Living in a Material World. It's a documentary about George Harrison of the Beatles, rather than about Madonna, as might be expected. George was the Beatle who seriously got into spiritual seeking. You don't tend to see stuff like that nowadays. You don't see Kanye West or Justin Bieber or Bruno Mars or Nicki Minaj making headlines because of some kind of spiritual seeking or their political or religious views. Kim Kardashian's not breaking the internet by planting her butt in a pew, ashram, or synagogue somewhere. Bruce Jenner's not speaking out about ultimate reality and finding meaning that goes more than plastic surgery deep. Because we're only interested in the outer appearance. We make and earn the celebrities we have. The Beatles, of course, started out as the ultimate boy band, fantasy boyfriends for teenage girls, singing songs about romantic love in its simplest, most adolescent and fresh form. This made them unstoppable in terms of drawing power and earnings. They had the ears of everyone, for money reasons and status. They'd touch the hearts of young people, and with them, the wallets of their parents. And their ideas weren't coming from a stable of hit writers. They were coming mostly from the Beatles themselves. They had a seemingly bottomless well of inspiration. But like a lot of famous people, once they got enough money, that money stopped being quite the pressing concern it once had been. They no longer needed money so badly, yet it threatened to take over their entire lives. It now involved a whole lot of business and signing things and attending meetings and boardrooms and avoiding, enacting, and launching lawsuits and counter-lawsuits. So something happened. For many people, one of the most troubling and difficult things that can happen is to attain one's life goal and still have much of one's life yet to live. Like many before and after him, George Harrison felt it wasn't really all about money and status and fame after all. Once he had it, he felt the need of something more. So what was it really all about? Unsurprisingly for nervous, angry young British men with chaotic, structureless, crowded lives outside, and intelligence, talent, and unexplored psychological baggage inside, it was about peace and love, apparently. About learning to be still and not allow oneself to be jostled. It was about not fighting, not striving, not expending all of one's inner resources. It was not about constant battles with lawyers and each other and critics. It was about being still, opening up, and finding peace, and then spreading peace and acting lovingly and getting love and peace back in return. It was about being quiet in nature. And West met East. The Beatles followed George's leading to connect with Indian religious figures, to be given mantras to get their minds some much-needed peace. Where we brethren folk had verses and amazing grace, they got chants and mantras and Indian music. They used it to detach from the chaotic mess that was their world of pop star obligations and fame, and start to be untouched by all of that, to retreat from it and let it all slide past. At first they'd used drugs to try to chase this dream. To perhaps a lesser degree, they continued to use them for some time after the initial interest waned. George Harrison tried LSD and pot to begin with, but increasingly saw that this was no better solution than the old British men around him who simply got drunk all the time. And in my opinion, although the Beatles kind of took tours through Indian religious activities, they'd already been raised to be religious in England, and I don't think they were looking to simply adopt and blindly follow another new religion. They felt that religion wasn't where it's at. I think they wanted to become men who had some wisdom inside, who knew how to be themselves without needing rituals and groups and ceremonies any more than they needed drugs. They were more than willing to experiment with mantras and music and rituals and ceremonies, but the Beatles never turned their back on life in England and became full-fledged members of really any religion. They wanted to be inspired, but not added to a membership list. These were just pop stars, yet society was clearly quite threatened and fascinated, first by what they saw as religious fervor in Beatles fans, and then by the individual Beatles themselves wanting to search for deeper meaning. It was the 60s. People were all talking about the modern Western world being unhealthy, modern folks having gotten important things all wrong, and everyone needing to search out new avenues for living. The Beatles were no different. In my own culture, I always felt like though it was the 80s and 90s, somehow the brethren were still staving off the 1960s, a generation later. The same feeling of being threatened by outside or new ideas. The same paranoia about change and individuality. It felt like the 1960s were trying to get into our meeting halls. It seemed like they were right outside our frosted windows. I'm sure in the 1920s, no Brethren person would ever have felt that an interesting mustache, beard, or goatee was rebellious, worldly, and unacceptably counterculture. In the 1950s and 60s, suddenly they were. And lengths of hair that were very ordinary for the 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s became suddenly totally unacceptable for men. And oddly, for young women too in many cases, as hippie girls often had long hair. So Brethren girls had shorter hair. Decent young Brethren people were clean-shaven, and girls as well as guys had short, obsessively tidy hairstyles in reaction against what was going on in the world around. They were believers rather than questioners, and followers rather than deconstructionists. So a generation later, that's still what was going on in our culture, apart from long hair being more or less mandatory for girls again. Nobody hassled old women with short hair, of course, but short hair was mandatory for males of all ages. But more threatening to our religious culture even than the fashion of the time was any form of seeking. Seeking is always seen as subversive because it signals dissatisfaction with what is currently being provided. All the Beatles had to do to upset people was look for new answers. After all, what was wrong with the old ones? Wasn't the act of seeking really a shouted comment on established thought being somehow lacking? Were the Beatles too good for your grandfather's best answers? What made them think they could just go around dismissing the thinking that had served Britain so well through two world wars? In the documentary, I saw John Lennon, not George so much, being badgered by reporters, lights going off in his face while he snapped at them when asked to explain his comments about the Beatles being better known, more recognizable across the world than Jesus Christ at that point in their careers. Something that was simply a fact. Self-explanatory, something Lennon had to deal with emotionally and decide what to think about, something as troubling and difficult as it was lucrative. This reminded me of being a Brethren young person with Brethren counterculture friends and being continually badgered by people who felt like you always owed them an explanation about absolutely anything they heard you might possibly have ever said or done. Because said thing, true or false, had supposedly troubled, upset, or worried them. People who'd built entire lives out of getting upset, demanding that you play the opposite role to their affronted decent person. Why weren't you content? What was wrong with what we already had? And why did you have a beard? What kind of testimony was that? Were you a hippie or something? Were you smoking the pot too? Taking the LDS? To be at all interested in any new thinking or ways to view life or the Bible or the world or the self was taken as an attack on the status quo. It also wasn't safe to be disinterested in meeting stuff. It certainly wasn't safe to be restless and discontented, and my Brethren friends and I were definitely all of those things. So we kept getting our own little press conferences in which people badgered us to give an account of ourselves. My friends and I were not the Beatles, but I identified with them a bit while watching this footage when I saw precisely what it was that would, and how little it took to, cause people to accuse them of upsetting people. When people heard of celebrities like George Harrison seeking answers, they got upset. When Harrison discovered and appreciated something that seemed very foreign and exotic, it really didn't help. Especially something un-British, non-white, non-black even. But what really upset them was when he did things like My Sweet Lord, in which he expresses appreciation for Southern Baptist gospel music. Because when one of them tries to love or enjoy something of ours, we get very upset. What right does he have to love our stuff? That's our stuff. And the worst thing about what he did with that song? He combines in one song authentic gospel ideas, including the lyrical and musical themes, and when he puts them with the Indian equivalent, they sound very much the same. He connects them. He doesn't take a side. And you've got to, right? Take a side for Jesus against Satan? And Ravi Shankar, and now by extension George Harrison, are emissaries of Satan, aren't they? In that song and others, Harrison shows that the wanting to open up, to find love and be loved, to stop being controlled by people and daily nonsense, to stop needing in return to try to control everything, is a vital, universal human struggle. And that upsets people, because our stuff has to be the good stuff, and their stuff has to be misleading, dangerous stuff our children must avoid. But this is supposed to be about love, isn't it? Searching for truth? learning how to be human really well, learning what purpose can be found in life and what is higher, greater, and above the everyday? When I say that the Beatles wanted a serene kind of quiet peace and love, given what their lives were, it makes me think back to what I needed at that age, what I was looking for. Like with all things me, the answer is double and contradictory. As to my culture, like the Beatles, I needed some distance, some quiet, some freedom from obligations, some peace, needed to stop being the focus of so many judgmental people's attention, didn't want notoriety just for trying to live a life that worked for me. I needed to detach from it all and learn to be myself in my own head and heart and life without being bothered by the brethren equivalent of nosy reporters and outraged parents. And that was starting to happen fairly naturally. The more I tried to meet God in my own way, rather than letting the church culture fill in for him, the more this started to happen all by itself. But as to the world outside my culture, I needed what the Beatles had already achieved by the time they'd reached my age. I needed connection, a career, work, new experiences, new people, noise, music, involvement, travel, chaos, passion, a voice. And this was going to take a lot of doing. And I was never going to be the Beatles. No one was. So I seemed to find myself taking part in a grand experiment. To the people of my culture, my life trajectory looked like something they felt they had seen all too many times before. Something that never ended well. A crash landing in the making. And perhaps I was simply doing what so many had done before. And yes, my faith and my chance of living a sensible life were at stake. My membership in my birth culture was hanging by a thread. Threats of severing that thread and bringing the sword of brethren down upon my wayward Damocles head were implicit but palpable. Imminent, it turned out. What it was like for me was meeting Jesus in a realer way than I ever had, overcoming a culture seemingly full of blind followers following blind leaders, and having him very solemnly but warmly hand me that white stone with a name and identity for me written on it, an identity no one but he and I knew, an identity I now had to figure out how to live amid throngs of people prophesying doom as to this life path. This odd course they didn't understand and could not control. My church culture had always taught us that we had to come out from the world around us to find God, out from 20th century human society and culture, and that then, a remnant within a remnant, we had to come out from what the other Christians were doing in their churches and draw aside from all of that stuff to find God in a deeper, less human way outside the camp. I'd grown up that way. Oddly, I found that I myself had to then come out from my church culture to find God, and that where God then sent me was not to church, but into the world into which he'd ensured I'd been born, connecting to the people around, even if they weren't from my church, even if they weren't Christians, even if I wasn't out preaching at them. People he'd made, people he loved. I was supposed to connect, to love, to understand, to relate to work with. So I didn't literally leave my church then, but I came out from it in terms of the isolationist thinking, tried to outgrow the need to control, the fear of the unfamiliar, and the unthinking arrogance. And timidly, I walked in the world, in this age, in our society, and tried to connect with it without buying into any of what was clearly crap, and without being eaten alive by it either. And so my friends and I were quite identifiable as a counterculture movement within the larger brethren culture. Rather than merely rebels fleeing it or skiving off behind the meeting hall to enjoy a quiet smoke before sitting right back up there playing brethren, we were reading books and coming up with our own views on the stuff said in meeting. We had questions about Christian liberty, about grace, and about how to live for God. And we were getting all of that from the Bible mostly. We'd approach old men and ask them things to see if we could agree with their views on it at all anymore, and often we'd find we could not, and that they were frequently unable to carry on any sort of genuine conversations with us. All too often, they were parroting things they'd heard from men long dead, and all they had for us was a trite pre-war saying of some kind. After they'd delivered that, they couldn't carry on any more discussion, and we needed to continue the conversation with someone. So they had to walk away from us. Heaven forfend they listen and grow to understand us. We were on an odd journey. And the consensus was that we were sinners and fools. Irresponsible, bohemian upstarts causing trouble when there was enough trouble already.